Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Pānātipātā vīramani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Ādinādhānā vīramani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Kāmesu micācārā vīramani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Musāvādā vīramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Sūrāmērāyā majjhāpamādathāna vīramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Now we are Chandapadipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganna sarapa dithena dipena tamadang sena tiloka dipang sambudang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambara yutena dopena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyantang Puja bhajana mutamang Vanna ganda gunopetang Etang kusuma santatin Pujayami munindasa Siri pada sarorohe Pūje mi buddhāṃ kasūme nānena Pūnne nā mate nā ca hotu mokhaṃ Pūpāṃ milāyati idāṃ me Kāyo tathāyati vināsa bhāvāṃ Ādivā setu no bhante Pāniyāṃ parikāpitāṃ Ānukampāṃ upādāyā Tigāṃ hātu mūtamāṃ Ādivāsetu no bhante Pāle parikāpitāṃ Ānukampāṃ upādāyā Pātigāṃ hātu mūtamāṃ Ādivāsetu no bhante bhojanaṃ parikāpitāṃ ānukampāṃ upādāyā pātigāṃ hātu mutamāṃ Now let us chant the puja aspirations based on our understanding of the significance of all these offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of these merits, bonds of this offering, may our spiritual faculty of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect. Triple J. Buddhang Pujemi. Namang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you can be seated. Then we can have half an hour of meditation.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then the basics of the chanting booklet, we will recite the invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chakawalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakamokkadang Dhamma Savanankalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanankalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanankalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Iti peso bhagava arahan sama sambuddho Vijacharana sampando sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusana Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Santitiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanayiko Chatang Veditambo Vinohiti Supatipando Gawato Savaka Sangho Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichipatipanno Gawato Savaka Sangho Yadidam chatari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sangho Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakeneyo anjali karaniyo Anuttaraṁ puñyaketaṁ lokāsāthi Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Rupa Jepa. Bandang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we can continue with our chapter 9, page 158. the Buddha and his story. Tonight is Jin Hao, Zhang Jin Hao.
Brother Teo and all the Kayamitas. Tonight my topic is chapter 10, is it? The Buddha's chief opponents and supporters. So one thing is no matter how good or how bad you are, you will have your supporter and opponents. In this chapter, I'm going to share with you all about the key supporter and opponents of the Buddha. However, for Buddha himself, I believe he doesn't have a good or bad perceptions towards anybody. He sees everything as conditioned originations. So he accepts all the treatments and offering with perfect no attachments. The first opponent that he has is Devatatta. Devatatta is also a prince, and in fact is a cousin or brother-in-law of the Buddha. He ordinate together with Ananda. So in his earlier age, he was okay, but later on, he was okay. Even Sariputta praised him for setting a good example to other monks. He was quite popular, and there were actually a large followings and also a lot of admire. So some of them even prefer him to Sariputta. But later on, he was diverted in his cultivations. He follows another guru practicing the psychic, you see. So he keep on comparing himself to Buddha. In fact, he was comparing himself when he was young the time, because they grew up in the same environments. So during whether the sport or academic, he also lose out to Buddha. So he have this kind of jealous towards him, you see. And over the years, he saw that Buddha have more disciples compared to him, and the jealousy grew. So there was one occasion he even asked Buddha to step down and hand over the whole Sangha to him. But Buddha refused and straight away said that not even to Sariputta or Moggallana that he will hand over to. See? So that incident made him very angry and vowed to take down Buddha. So Devatatta also have a very strong supporter. That was King Ajatasattu. Before King Ajatasattu become king, he have the similar intentions with Devatatta, because he want to become the king earlier, so he actually killed his father to succeed the throne and become the king. Just like Devatatta wanted to take down Buddha and become the leader of the Sangha. Devatatta actually also, there are a few ways that he wanted to kill Buddha. One way is that he actually hired the bowman, you see, to shoot Buddha. But out of his expectation is that the bowman actually was how do you say that? Buddha actually overturned them to become their disciple. See, so he have no choice, but he wanted to kill Buddha so much that he then wanted to do it himself. He climbed up to the mountain, which is Kijahatu, and pushed down one of the big rocks when Buddha was crossing the path, you see. Luckily, the rock didn't hit Buddha directly, but it was struck to another small pieces of stone, and that wounded Buddha's foot. So that, again, he didn't manage to kill Buddha. And there was also other way that he tried, was that he actually drunk the elephant and charged the elephant to go towards Buddha. See? But Buddha used the metta to calm down the elephants. So he was trying all the ways, you see. And he even wanted to cause a chaos in Sangha and causing a Sikhism, you see. So he actually worked out a plan together with another bhikkhu, which is also equally evil-minded with him, you see. It's called Koka Lika, see. So he proposed to Buddha to impose 5 rules, you see. And he knew that Buddha would not impose these 5 rules to the Sangha, see. So these 5 rules are like, you know, want to live in the forest, you know, propose that all the Sangha should live in the forest, should live on armed backs, and should wear only the robes that's made from the, you know, collections from the graveyard and all those, you see, and should live at the foot of the tree, and should not eat fish or flesh throughout their life, you see, throughout their life. So he know that Buddha will not going to agree with him, you see. Yet why he proposed that? Because he want to distinguish himself between Buddha and him, to show to the others Sangha that he is more noble and superior, you see, because he set a very high standard, you see. So that actually confused some of the monks, especially those new bhikkhus, you see. And that caused Sikhism in the Sangha. However, later part of in his life, he realized that he was actually doing very wrong, and he wanted to seek for forgiveness. But the karma was so bad that before he even able to meet Buddha, he was die miserably. See? So in the books he didn't mention that why Devatatta had such a cross, you know, such a evil rooted emotions toward Buddha. But I did check from some of the other sources that they did say that in the Jagata story that actually Buddha and him had a lot of they actually met each other in the many of his past life, you see. And there are a few lives that actually Buddha did kill him, you see, when Buddha was in a normal being the time, you see. So, and they have a lot of competitive relationship to each other. So that's why I think that is part of the karma, I mean the seed that planted into Devatatta, see. So another one apart from him, the very strong supporter of Buddha is Anathapindika. I don't know whether I pronounced correctly.
Yeah, correct. Anathapindika. Okay.
He was the richest tycoon in Sawati, you see. we can put that for example, like, you know, the richest person in Malaysia, you see. So there was one day he visited his brother-in-law, and he was surprised to see that his brother-in-law so busy in decorations the whole house, you see, as if like, you know, he's going to have a wedding for his daughter, you see. But he asked his brother-in-law, said, what happened, you see. The brother-in-law say that they are preparing to offer to Buddha in the next morning. When he heard the name of the Buddha, he was so happy, and the whole heart was vibrated, you see. He wanted to see Buddha straight away. So he actually couldn't sleep for the whole night, you see. Just wanted to wait for the break the morning and rush to see Buddha. So in that earlier morning, before the sun raised up, he was so excited. So he actually rushed to look for Buddha, you see. So his faith is so strong that there's light emanate from his body to show the path to the Buddha, you see. So when he first met the Buddha, and Buddha discussed the Dhamma, and he straight away becomes Sotapanna. And he then invited Buddha to stay in Sawati. At that time, there was no proper monastery to house such a big group of Sangha and Buddha. So he actually searching around in Sawati, and he came across that there's one very beautiful park in Sawati, which was owned by the Princess Jata. So he asked the prince to sell him the park, and the prince refused for doing so. He said that, you know, I'm the prince, you see, why should I do that? But Anatta Pitika insisting that, you know, wanted and said that, you know, no matter how much you name the price, I'll pay for it. So to turn down his request, he said that if you're able to place all the gold coins in all the whole part, then I will sell the part to you. So when Anatta Pitika heard that, he was so happy, you see. He just keep on asking his neighbor to bring out all his gold coins, you see. And the prince was so surprised to see that. He said that, you know, there's nobody, you know, that willing to do that, you see. And why, what are the motive behind that? You know, what bring you to do such a crazy thing, you see. And he shared his opinions with the prince and said that, you know, because he wanted to house the Buddha and Sangha so that they're able to do the discourse over at Sawati and benefit the people around, you see. So the prince was so touched that, or say that, okay, I can sell you the piece of land, but the tree is still belong to me. What he's going to do is, like, you know, he's going to also dana the trees to build the monastery. So together, he partake the these events. So there are several major sutra that actually taken place in that monastery. One of the very famous sutra is actually Diamond Sutra. So Buddha did say that even though dana, the temples or monastery, is a very wholesome merit, but it is not greater than seeking refuge to the Triple Gems. And on top of that, if a person able to keep the five precepts, the merit will be even higher. And the highest among all are that if you're able to cultivate insight meditations to develop metta and vipassana, that will be even greater compared to all the others' merits. And Buddha also stated there are four types of happiness for the layman. First of all is the bliss of ownership. The second is the bliss of wealth. Third is the bliss of debtless. The fourth is the bliss of blandness. So the bliss of ownership is if you're able to possess a career or skill that are legitimate. So if you able to, if a lay person layman's able to own a skillful living, that there are how many people that you know in the proper way, that is the bliss of ownership. The bliss of wealth is like able to acquire the wealth through the proper channel. That is the bliss of wealth. And the bliss of debtless is like you didn't own any people's any money. The last one is the bliss of blameless. It's like you, I put it in a way that if the person able to free themselves from the body, speech, and mind, so that would be the bliss of blameless. And Anatta Pitaka actually have a very very what do you call that? Elegance, snobby daughter-in-law, is it? Which is called Sujata. Well, she has no respect to anybody, including the father-in-law or his own father or any other people, is it, around her. So Buddha actually discussed to her that there are seven types of wife in this world. First is a troublesome wife, a thief wife, a lawyerful wife, a motherly wife, a sisterly wife, a friendly wife, and a handmaid wife. So they actually, interesting enough, is that Buddha have classified that the wife into seven types. And ask her, the Sujata, they say, which type of wife do you want to be? You see? So that actually turned around Sujata, and she vowed to be a handmaid wife, you see. So, interesting. Another very strong supporter to Buddha is Visakha. Visakha is a very wise and capable woman at her time, you see. And she also is a very strong Dhamma supporter towards Buddha. It was said that she has the strength of a man and the charm of a lady. So with her wisdom, she actually converted the whole family into a happy Buddhist family. And she says, sets a very good female role examples in the Buddha society, in that society, you see. And she has helped Buddha to resolve many issues occurred in the bhikkhunis. They will say that our eight precepts was actually I think arise from her, is it? Towards Buddha. So she was, and there's book say that she had the fortune to have 10 sons and 10 daughters, you see. And she lived up to 120 years old. The last supporter is Jivaka. Jivaka is actually a physician's, or is called it the doctors of the Buddha. He was abandoned by his mother when he was was born, you see, at the roadside, and it was later adopted by the prince who happened to pass by. So he later grew up to be a very skillful physician, and you would say that he performed several brain surgery during his times, and he helped to take care of Buddha. And the time when Buddha's foot was wounded by Devadatta, he was the one that attends to Buddha and to cure Buddha's, to take care of Buddha. And he later also suggested to Buddha to ask the monk to do the daily exercise such as sweeping, you see. And he also became the Sotapanna during Buddha's time, you see. So my sharing is up to here.
Okay, good.
Let us rejoice, huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, very good. You all got anything to ask Chin Hao? Yeah, you can ask him anything. Yeah? Then you can also maybe put forward some questions so that we can have a discussion. What I like is, PG. Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, Brother Teo. I noticed that, we heard several times.
Yes.
Regarding Devadatta and the Buddha. That means we take it that you're saying that these people that we meet in this life and in our past lives, that means somehow we'll still come together.
So it depends. The karmic conditioning can make you come together. But the
in different roles, right?
Not only that, the karmic conditioning for different people is very different. For Devadatta's case, is very complicated. And it all happened because of one life. Just now Chin Hao mentioned many lives. But one major one is the Bengal incident, where they were merchants selling bangles. But because the Buddha to be, the Bodhisattva at that time was very sincere, and because he kept to his precepts, he does not deceive, does not cheat. Then during that Bengal incident, there was an old lady who has a grandchildren. I think the grandchildren like these bangles, but then the old lady got no money, so couldn't afford the bangle. But he got a golden pot. She didn't know it was a golden pot. So she went and took that golden pot, not knowing that it was a golden pot, and go and ask Devadatta, who was the bangle merchant at that time. He said, "Can I have some bangles from you in exchange for this pot?" But this Devadatta was very greedy. He wanted to cheat the old lady of the golden pot. So he told the old lady, he said, "No, this pot is not worth anything, not worth much. I can't, he said. "Maybe you give me the pot, I give you a bit of the bangles." Then this old lady knew this guy was not sincere. So he said, "Okay, never mind." Then they decide to move on. Then they met the Bodhisattva at that time, who was also a bangles merchant. Then asked the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva was so full of joy, he told the old lady, he said, "Please, yours is a golden pot. You can have all my bangles. It's not enough to pay you. I can't," he said, "because this pot is made of gold. It's worth a lot." So this old lady saw that this merchant is so sincere. He said, "Don't worry, I just need your bangles for my granddaughter. You can have the pot." So that's how he got the pot. Then on her way back, Devadatta saw them with all the bangles. No? Got very unhappy and angry. Asked them, "Who was the one who sold you the bangle?" Say, that merchant, he said, "My pot is worth a lot more than this bangle." So he was very, very angry. Yeah, he thought he has the first right to the golden pot. But this merchant, to him, it's like a deceit. A deceit. He tried to like take this spot from him. It's supposed to be rightfully his. So he chased the Bodhisattva. Then when he reached the river, the Bodhisattva was already crossing the river with the boat. He was so angry, he made that very, very powerful vow. He willed it very strongly. He said, life after life, he will chase, he will come after him to revenge, to take back the golden pot. And because of that very strong will of mine, through anger, through hatred, through selfishness and greed, it created the affinity for them to life after life, for many, many lives, to be together. But just like the final life, initially Devadatta was not a bad devotee. Then because of past hatred, selfishness, anger, he created Sikhism and a lot of other very severe karmic negativity. That's how he fell. And many lives too, when he was together with the Buddha, he created a lot of very, very severe karmic situation because of his anger, his hatred, and his very strong will. So that was the main karmic conditioning from that life. That's why he was able to take birth as his cousin, as his friend, village people, village commune, and all those things. So these are the karmic conditioning. So not necessarily you vow it will be the good one. Because you vow to hatred. That's why don't simply make very strong-willed vow or determination. It's either way. Thought-based also very powerful. You got a lot of anger and hatred. But you have a lot of goodness, wholesomeness, sincerity. Just like Ananda Pindaka, his generosity, his faith, until you can see light emitting from his heart and her first thing. So karmic conditioning is very powerful. If you will it, then it's very powerful. But the highest is the one that has Dhamma. The one that has Dhamma, no need to will. He just sent a pure wish through his, what they call, awakened mind. That pure mind. The pure mind's pure wish is very powerful. Because this pure mind that has the wisdom will know how to invoke causes and conditions for things to happen. And they will invoke it through your wholesomeness, your merits, whatever that you are able to do and perform. They will know that they invoke that one. And it's very powerful. Then sometimes if there is condition, they will radiate their love, their metta, and send you a pure wish. So that one is very rare. Can only be done by those enlightened beings. Okay? Yeah. Anything else? Pass back to Jin Hao. What I like about Jin Hao is he didn't follow the text, but he read it out through prepared notes, which is very good. He tried, I think he must have spent some time collecting all the information after reading through, check the internet, just like what Adeline did. Then he presented it. This is a good way to express yourself, learn to express yourself. Then when you go through this exercise, you actually spend time doing research. Then you reflect, you contemplate, you understand many things. Just like Brother Song, when he did that chapter, even though he have understood much of the Dhamma, but when you go through it, it's different again. Because everything that is expounded by the Buddha, it has great meaning and significance. So all this can help you in developing your cultivation, your understanding, and also whatever that you might want to develop through the process. Okay, anybody else?
Thank you. I actually have one question.
Okay.
Okay,
Buddha mentions there are four types of happiness. One of those are the breed of devilessness, you see. But for our society now, it's very difficult not to have debts, you see. Like for instance, like we own the house, property, or the cars, you see. That still have some debts. So how should we explain that?
Okay, that's a very relevant question. Huh? Maybe for the benefit of others, I will just read through this part so that you understand clearly what this four type of joy that lay people can have. This four type of joy that lay people can have is very unique. Okay, turn to page 160. Paragraph 2. It is evident from this discourse that generosity is the first stage on the way of a Buddhist life. More important than generosity is the observance of at least the five rules or precepts for regulating behaviors, which tend to the disciplining of words and deeds. So your action, speech, and thought. Still more important and more beneficial is the cultivation of such ennobling virtue like loving kindness, which leads to self-development. Most important and most beneficial of all, self-discipline, is the sincere effort to understand things as they truly are, means the Dhamma. Then commenting on the four kind of bliss or happiness that a lay person may enjoy, the Buddha declared, there are these four kinds of happiness to be won by the householder who enjoys the pleasure of senses from time to time and when occasion offer. Occasion offer means when there is condition. You must understand that. The bliss of ownership, Atisukhang. The bliss of wealth, Bhogasukhang. The bliss of debtlessness, Ananasukhang. And the bliss of blamelessness, Anavajasukha. Then it is explained this way. The bliss of ownership. What is the bliss of ownership? Herein, a clansman has wealth acquired by energetic striving, means through diligence, amassed by strength of arm, won by sweat, lawful and lawfully gotten, means not stealing, deceit, and all those things, means you have make your earn your wealth or your earnings in a legitimate legal way. At the thought, wealth is mine acquired through proper means, lawfully gotten. Bliss comes to him, satisfaction comes to him. This is called the happiness or the bliss of ownership. So for us, in this civilization of ours, especially after you graduate or after you come out to the job market, the career field, especially your first month's salary or pay when you receive them, you I don't know whether you all feel the same as me. You know, I felt very good. For the first time, I was able to make this type of wages or salary through my own effort, through my own proper striving and sincere way of carrying out my duty to work for people. So there is a lot of joy that you can have. Then you feel like very, very honored and very happy when you can spend this wages on proper usage of what you want to do with those salary or money that you receive. The first thing, of course, I think of buying a dinner or having a proper lunch with my own family members, especially my parents. The first thing is to thank them. Then the other one is to look for good friends or close friends who may want to maybe have a meal with me. So I will make it a point to plan all these things. Then there is so much joy. So this is what we call the happiness of ownership or possession. When you are able to accumulate all this wealth or possession in a righteous way, in a proper way. So not necessarily your salary. Sometimes your first home, your first house, or your first car. So these are the things that you can develop joy when you have the means to own them. So happiness of ownership, this is something that lay people can have, the Buddha said. When there is condition for you to have, you have the means, you should make use of it. Then the second one is the bliss of wealth. So this one you have to understand. The second happiness is your ability to make use of what you have gained through the proper way or proper means for the happiness of yourself and others. It is for the happiness of yourself and others. So the second type of happiness, or they call it the bliss of wealth, is your ability to make use of this wealth in a proper manner for the happiness of yourself and others. So let us read here, see what they say. Herein, a clansman, by means of wealth acquired by proper means, both enjoy his wealth and thus meritorious deed therein. And the thought, by means of wealth acquired, I both enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds. Bliss comes to him. Satisfaction comes to him. This is called the bliss of wealth. So it's the same. You know how to make use of this, whether for merit making, or to help people, or to provide for your own family and your own need, to improve your life, to provide for things that you want to have, which can give rise to joy and happiness. Then of course you can do charity, you can help people, you can do whatever wholesomeness you want with the wealth you have. Even support the Sangha, or support the cultivator, or even make offering to charitable organizations. Then sometimes you can also support schools, places where they don't have proper school, then water supply, amenity, and all those things. So this is the second one. The third one is what Chin Hao was trying to ask. The bliss of deathlessness, when you are free from death. Here, the Buddha's meaning is very precise. Our society nowadays, you look at it, to be free of death is something that a lot of people would look forward to. They are not this type of mortgage loan that Chin Hao is talking about. Most of this mortgage loan or whatever, because our society, the financial system have this, most of this mortgage loan is not the high risk one, not the one that come with a lot of problem one. During the olden days, of course it's way after the Buddha's time. I remember in the 60s, I used to hear people telling me, if you really desperate and need money, you go to Jatia. You heard Jatia? They really charge you. Then the next one, which is not so severe, is the pawn shop. Go and pawn your thing. At least you pawn, you won't get into trouble. You understand or not? If you cannot pay, they forfeit what you bought. But Jatia are different. Jatia, they come after you. They are slightly better than our Chinese type of Tai Long. Understand? Tai Long, they call what? Shark, loan shark. Huh? You know what is a shark or not? They really whack you. If they smell blood, they will come after you and they will eat you up. So nowadays society, unless people are real desperate, they won't go for loan shark. But because they got no other choice. That's why they end up being afflicted, miserable. So these are the loan category that the Buddha is trying to ask you to avoid. But if it's a proper type of loan, like the pawn shop, I have seen my mother, my father, they sometimes need money, they will go and pawn their jewelry. But this, what they call pawn shop, they are very fair. They make an assessment of what your that thing is worth. Then they say, okay, I can lend you so much. Then, after you agree, they got certain deadline. You have to come and redeem this one. So when you redeem, the interest part is the cost that you have to redeem. So they will tell you, okay, this one you pawn, I can give you 100 ringgit. But if you want to redeem, 3 months time, if you choose a longer period, the repayment will be higher. Then you say you can redeem with 120 or 110 in 3 months. So to them it's mainly less than a year. So sometimes they need money for wedding or for business or what. Then they have this time frame to slowly accumulate to redeem. Then if you cannot redeem, you can go back and extend by paying a premium. So this type of thing, many people use them. Then for my mother and my father, because later on they don't need to go and borrow or go to pawn shop, but they have a very good relationship with the pawn shop. So my mother like to put money there. She said, you put it in the bank, they pay you very low interest, but the pawn shop, the interest is much higher. And my mother was so lucky, I think, because she never cheat people. She has been putting in the pawn shop for so many years, until later when I came out to work. Then during the 80s, our interest rate went up a lot. I don't know whether you all can recall. It went up to 13 point something percent a year. So during that time, I went back and told my father, I said, you should shift your money. Well, my father trusted OCBC. It's as solid as a rock. But interest rate very low. This OCBC. Then my mother, nobody can persuade her to move her money. He said, you cannot beat my pawn shop. So I said, your pawn shop pay you how much? That time she was very proud. Well, she get 10% a year. So 10% a year is about, I think, nearly 1% a month. So I told her, I said, you put in this type of fixed deposit bank, some more guarantee, you get 13%. Then why you want to put in the pawn shop? He said, people trust the pawn shop more than the bank. Because he said, this pawn shop has been doing business with us for so long. I said, you heard of a lot of pawn shop runners? He said, God, sure, she never read papers. And I told her, I said, yeah, this is a common phenomenon in other states, especially during crisis. Then because she has faith in me, she trusts me, she decides to go and ask for the money back and want to put in the bank. When he went to the pawn shop guy told her, no, why you scared? I say, we won't run one, you say. Then my mother also not stupid wise. Never mind lah, I also need the money, you say. So she also didn't lie. Then she told my mother, I say, you need money, I need 1 week. Not like bank though. You go redeem, you get your money. This one you need 1 week, because he said they need to gather the cash for her. So return to her. Luckily she redeemed it. Well, 3 months later, the pawn shop, he got a lot of chain on, absconded with all the money to Australia. A few million. That time a few billion is a lot of money here. We are Alastair. A lot of people got it. Kena. Then my mother was so happy. She said, well, luckily you asked me to take it out. So this is what you should understand. If your parami is good, you won't end up as victim to all these things. But if you in the past have cheated people, deceived people, then you will get yourself entangled. So coming back to Chin Hao's question, to be debt free is to be free from problems, understand or not? When you are debt free, you don't have to worry about your installment payment, your debt repayment. So your mind, for lay people, especially without the Dhamma yet, can be free. That is its meaning. But for us in modern society, what I understand, I hope most of you are like my condition. We borrow not because we need loan. We borrow because we don't want to trouble income tax questioning us buying cash, etc. So we just take a loan. Then when we take a loan, no question asked, buy car, buy house or what. Then sometime during the early days, when you just came out to work, you don't have money, understand? So this type of financing is the best. Long term, you can take up to 25 years when you are young. So this type of mortgage, they are like pre-planned for people who have the means to repay. They are not like loan shark, understand, or squeeze you and create problem for you. So they vet you. Your salary so much, after deducting all your commitment, they know there is a certain ratio. If your repayment is less than 30% of what you earn, they believe you have the means to repay. So low risk loan. So this one, no headache one. Understand? Then you also don't have problem one. You also don't have to worry about it because every month your salary come, you only need 30%. Then 70% is enough for you to survive. Then most of us have our saving. Just in case you are out of job, we can last for 6 months to a year repayment at least. So these are what they call, you have your umbrella ready for rainy season. So such loan, to me, does not create problem. That's why that type of happiness, you can still have it. Happiness of debtlessness. Debtlessness. It's like you don't have debt because why? Basically, your savings is more than what your bank loan is. So even when crisis come, economic crisis come, worst case scenario, settle your loan, that's it. Or continue to pay your installment, you don't have a problem. So there is no mental agony involved in those type of debts. So when you look at it from that point of view, you will come to an understanding that the Buddha's intent is very good. He said the bliss of deathlessness. You can have that mind that is blissful, happy, because you are free from that. So if you want to be completely free from that, you just pay off your loan because you have your means. Then you find out how is it like. But if you want to maintain some of this loan because you find it useful and it's not giving you any problem, you can also continue. The only thing is, when you are not around, you make sure your will provide for all those things. Yeah? Otherwise, our loan, they are planned with even death benefit. You can buy what they call mortgage reducing term assurance, MRTA. If anything happened to you, the insurance pay, and the property goes to your estate. Then you can have it. So those type of insurance are not a problem at all. Then all this so-called loan, you have to understand its purpose and intent. If you take it without understanding, then subject yourself to unnecessary hassle and problem, then you have to be careful. Even you are desperate for money, capital, or what, you should think clearly. Don't take that type of risk, because the default, the consequence of default for such loan is very, very traumatic. So what to put a man is, don't get yourself involved in such debtless, debt position. Okay? So a lot of people, they are so worried. They got the meaning wrong. They thought the Buddha's intent in that teaching is to make sure you don't take loan. No. That is not the intent. The intent is, as a lay person, you can have that happiness. Happiness of debtlessness means without debt. That's it. And you must understand what it means by without debt. No headache. And that's no problem. So it is not a rigid thing. So hopefully people can develop the understanding. Otherwise, I realize a lot of so-called Buddhists, they are very, very worried that if they have car loan, housing loan, am I going against the Buddha's teaching of debtlessness? I am having debt. Forget about it. Understand? The more deeper intent or understanding is, the Buddha's intent is different. That's why he talked about the bliss, the happiness that comes with a situation where you are without debt. He doesn't say you cannot have debt. No. He never said that. Any other question? Is there anybody else want to ask Jinho any or raise any topic for discussion related to this? We still got quite a bit of time, 30 over minutes. Okay, if you don't have, then we thank Jinho for the good sharing. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then I will read through the text one round. We can do a quick one so that you can understand all this thing better.
Just one more thing is that I happened to find the Chinese versions of this book. So the translation is very good. Okay, because I noticed this one is the English is 60s English, is Queen English, is it? Yeah. So, so whoever want, you can just send it to them, to you.
Yeah, maybe you can send through the WhatsApp. Is it a soft copy? I think they have soft copy too. PDF. Put it on the website. That will be very good.
Thank you.
page 158, chapter 10, the Buddha's chief opponents and supporters. So first, there is this Dhammapada saying, we should read through this. This one is very good. As a solid rock is not shaken by the wind, even so the wise are not ruffled by praise or blame. So this is a very good Dhammapada verse. Like the rock, whatever the wind, whatever the weather, the storm or what, is not shaken by them. So even so, the wise are not ruffled by praise or blame. Whether people blame you or praise you, your mind is not affected. Then we can extend it beyond praise and blame. Under whatever situation, when you confront the Noble Truth realities, you can also have a mind that is unruffled, that does not stir and is not affected by situation. Okay, then we go on. The Buddha worked disinterestedly for the well of mankind, making no distinction between rich and the poor, the high and the low. His followers and supporters were drawn both from the highest and lowest rung of the social ladder. So spontaneous was the love, and so profound was the veneration of the people, that kings and nobles, millionaires and paupers, poor folk and cautions, men and women of all rank. Veda. Okay, we continue. Okay. Men and women of all ranks will with one another to be of service to him and make his noble mission a success. The wealthy spend lavishly to erect suitable monastery for him, while the poor, full of faith, demonstrated their piety in their humble way. With perfect equanimity, he accepted the gift of the rich and the poor, but show no partiality to any. Nevertheless, he showed more compassion to the poor and the lowly. Like a bee that extracts honey from a flower without hurting it, he lived among his followers and supporters without causing the slightest inconvenience to any. Offerings of diverse kind were showered on him, and he accepted them all with perfect non-attachment. Though absolutely pure in motive and perfectly selfless in his service to humanity, yet in preaching and spreading his teaching, the Buddha had to contend against strong opposition. He was severely criticized, roundly abused, insulted, and ruthlessly attacked, as no other religious teacher had been. So from this Jataka story, you will come to know even the Buddha is not able to avoid all this. So the word that they use, if you were to reflect on it, even the Buddha can be subject to all this. What about you and me? We are nothing compared to him. So sometimes when you go through life, when you encounter all this, you should reflect, not only me, the Buddha also have a situation. That's why we have to understand that this is part of life. find out the reality of life and existence. And maybe some people may have some question regarding this aspect. He is the Sammasambuddha. He should understand the teaching perfectly well. He should have all the parami. How come this life is more or less finalized to become the Sammasambuddha? He is still subject to all this. Does this question cross your mind? Huh? Does this question cross your mind? Why don't you ask? I didn't want to discuss this because I knew the answer. That's why, for me, I'm not surprised. You see, a lot of things happen when there is condition. Do you understand? When you become the Sammasambuddha, you are creating such condition. A lot of people, a lot of religious teacher of other religion, they will be jealous of you. You understand? Then there are certain things that is comically drawn to that segmented life of the Buddha, like Devadatta's case and all those things. So he cannot avoid. Then even Mongalana, the foremost in psychic, because of that life when he killed, he and the wife planned to deceive and kill the parents who are blind, that karmic carry forward. Then there are certain incidents where the Bodhisattva during the early days, through ignorance, offended Pacheka Buddhas. When he was a child, one of the life incidents, he put sand into a particular Buddha's butt. And because of that, he suffered. Then Chincha incident also same. Because in certain past life, he did it to the enlightened beings. Sometimes you don't know. You abuse them, you scold them, you accuse them. Then when you become Sammasambuddha, this condition, as long as there is condition, it will take its course. Then it will arise. That's why you look at what is being written here. The Buddha had to contend against strong opposition, because even he is a Sammasambuddha, a lot of people oppose him, you know. Devadatta oppose him. And I was told during the early day by Ravan Suvano, there were many incidents in the Jataka story where the Buddha just walked out of his the place where he settled down. Because a lot of this incident was involving the disciple quarreling. Then the Buddha gave his advice, they don't want to listen. So the Buddha walked off, go into the forest, until finally Ananda got to go and look for him. Then persuade him to come back. There are many incidents. All this can happen when you become too famous, understand? When you have too much disciple, when you have a lot of these people. That's why when the community, the Sangha, develop and become very big, you have all sorts of people. And all this type of what they call misunderstanding, quarrel, argument, views, opinion, they will come forth in a very horrendous way. Because too many of these people. Then, apart from contending against strong opposition, he was also severely criticized, abused, insulted, and ruthlessly attacked by Devadatta and others, as no other religious teacher had been. His chief opponent are ordinary teachers of rival sects. See? This is what will happen when you become too famous. And follower of heretical school, who traditional teaching and superstitious rites and rituals, he just criticized. It's the same as Reverend Suvano. the late Reverend Suwano Penang. You remember when he started to, actually he didn't criticize, no, when he started to point out that all those Chinese traditional funeral rites and ritual, he said, don't go and waste money engaging all these people, doing all the what they call lamolo or what, I don't know. You invite them for the chant, it's not cheap. One night can be a few thousand, cheapest one also a few hundred. Then he said, no need, the Buddha's teaching, the Buddhist teaching, no need all this thing. He said, invite the monk, one dana, then up to you, no need to pay also can. They do the chanting, the transfer of merit, the sharing of merit. Then understand the teaching, live the righteous way. Then your life will be taken care of. Actually, no need feng shui and all those things also. Wow, those people who are in that business and that trade, they cannot tolerate. You know. The business become so badly affected. You know. Because when people believe all this, they will surely accept it because save money. True or not? So if all these are not necessary, all those related business, like paper house, all the thing where they can sell to you, the joystick, all those things, the business will be affected. And these people don't like. So during that time, I was told he got into a lot of trouble with people. People criticize him. People abuse him. People say, you don't simply say things that affect people's livelihood and all those things. So these are bound to happen when you try to, what they call, impart certain type of proper understanding to people. Because human beings are just human beings with delusion, with selfishness, with craving, desire, emotional negativity, all the various views and opinions. So when you deal with people, deal with society, you have to be very tactful. So that's the reason why during the early years, my nature refused to come out to share, is because it knew about all these things. But then somehow conditions arise, and I set three conditions. Luckily, those conditions were good and protected the sanctity of this sharing. No right, no wrong. Then my advice is, don't quote me. Understand not? Save us a lot of problems. If you go out and simply say, Brother Teo say this, Brother Teo say that, I tell you, then too famous also, no point. Too many people come to know the word spread. You get into big trouble for nothing. So we just let condition flow. Now that we have the website, it's better still. I can make all this very clear so that when people come, then say, no, we are just sharing. You don't have to believe us. Because there is no right, no wrong. We are not here to argue. We are here to share our understanding, and we respect each other for what we have developed and learned, our cultivation and all those things. Then make use of whatever that is wholesome, appropriate for your own progress, and move on. So these are the beautiful conditions. So that's the reason why a lot of things can be avoided when you have all this understanding. Yeah. Okay, we go on. He justly criticized his greatest personal enemy, who made a vain attempt to kill him, was his own brother-in-law, and an earnest while disciple, Devadatta. So Devadatta, the mother, it seems, was the sister of the wife. Sister of Yasodhara, isn't it? Okay, we read on. The Buddha and Devadatta. Devadatta was the son of King Supabuddha and Pamita, the aunt of the Buddha. Yasodhara was his sister. Ah, correct. Yasohara was Sakyamuni Buddha's wife. He was thus a cousin and brother-in-law of the Buddha. He entered the order in the early part of the Buddha's ministry together with Ananda and the other Sakyan prince. He could not attain any of the stages of sainthood, but was distinguished for worldly psychic power. See, when you have a lot of psychic, you may not be enlightened. Puttujanika idi, means the psychic of the lay people, lay person, or thought base. One of his chief supporters was King Ajatasattu, who built a monastery for him. During the early part of his career, he led such an exemplary life that even Venerable Sariputta went about Rajangaha extolling him, means praising him. Later, overcome by worldly gain and honor and growing jealousy of the Buddha, Devadatta became so radically changed in his character that he proved to be the greatest personal enemy of the Buddha. Simultaneously with the arising of ill will in his heart towards the Buddha, see, these are evil roots, his psychic power automatically ceases. Do you understand this or not? When you have a lot of anger, your psychic ability will be gone. So when he lost his psychic ability, he actually became miserable. Despite his evil way and corrupt life, he had a large following and many admirers, and some even prefer him to Venerable Sariputta. On one occasion, he approached the Buddha and requested him to hand over the leadership of the Sangha to him as the Buddha was advanced in age. The Buddha straightaway refused, saying, "Not even to Sariputta or Moggallana would I hand over the Sangha. Would I then hand it to you? Over to you." He was enraged at this refusal and vowed vengeance. To safeguard and maintain the dignity of the Sangha, the Buddha caused a proclamation to be made that Devadatta alone was responsible for anything done by him in the name of the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha. Means he cannot quote the Buddha. He has to be responsible on his own. He therefore conspired with King Ajatasattu to kill the Buddha. Ajatasattu was advised to kill his father and usurp the throne, while he himself decided to kill the Buddha and lead the Sangha. Ungrateful Ajatasattu succeeded in killing his devout father, and Devadatta hired bowmen to murder the Buddha. But contrary to his expectation, all the hiring became the Buddha's follower. Foiled in his attempt, he himself resolved to kill the Buddha. When the Buddha was walking on the slope of Gejakuta, he climbed the peak and mercilessly hurled a rock at the Buddha. Fortunately, it struck another piece of rock, and a splinter slightly wounded his leg, causing the blood to flow. Jivaka, the physician, attended on him and cured him. Devadatta make another unsuccessful attempt to kill the Buddha by dispatching the elephant Nalagiri after infuriating the elephant with liquor against the Buddha. When the ferocious elephant approached the Buddha, Venerable Ananda stepped forward to sacrifice his life for the sake of the master, but the Buddha subdues the beast by his loving kindness, metta. That's why you have metta, it's very useful. By this last wicked act, Devadatta became extremely unpopular, and public opinion was so much against him that the king was compelled to withdraw his patronage. Devadatta fell into disgrace, and all his favor decreased. He now decided to live by deceit His fertile brain devised another seemingly peaceful plan with the help of equally evil-minded bhikkhu like Kokalika. He thought of causing a schism in the order. You know what is schism, eh? Causing disorder in the Sangha. He requested the Buddha to enforce the following five rules among the bhikkhu. I think this one, Chin Hao already read to you all. That monk should dwell all their lives in the forest. That they should live on arms back. That they should wear pasakula robe. That is rope made from rags collected from cemetery and dust heap. That they should live at the foot of a tree. That they should not eat fish or flesh throughout life. Means vegetarian. Yeah? This he did, knowing fully well that the Buddha would not ascend hereto. He desired to make the Buddha's refusal a pretext for disparaging the Buddha and thereby winning the support of the ignorant mass. When this request was made, the compassionate and tolerant Buddha declared that his disciples are free to adopt this rule or not, but would not make them compulsory for all. See, the Buddha is very fair. He doesn't say no, and he doesn't approve. But he say his followers are free to adopt if they want to. Devadatta made the refusal a cause for Sikhism in the order. He appealed to the bhikkhu, saying, "Brother, whose word are the nobler, the word of the Tathagata or the word of which I myself have uttered? Whoever desire release from suffering, let him come with me." See, he was so eloquent. Newly ordained monk who were not conversant with the Dhamma apparently approved of his demand and went over to him. Accompanied by them, he went to Gaya Sisa. But Venerable Sariputta and Moggallana, on the advice of the Buddha, went there and succeeded in winning back after explaining the Dhamma to them. Thereafter, evil day fall upon Devadatta. He felt grievously ill, and before his death, he sincerely repented and desired to see the Buddha. But his bad karma interfered, and he had to die a miserable death without seeing the Buddha. However, he sought refuge in the Buddha at the last moment. You know how he died, or not? He was trying to approach the Buddha. Then, when he was approaching the place where the Buddha lived, it seems, I was told in the Jataka story by Reverend Suvanna also, the earth opened up and swallowed him because of his coming. So he can't even reach the Buddha. So this was all the Jataka story and the coming thing. Although he suffered in the willful state of his heinous crime, yet as a result of the holy life he led during the early part of his career, it is stated that he would become a Pichika Buddha named Atisara in the distant future. So this was, it seems, predicted by Sakyamuni Buddha, that finally he will become a Pichika Buddha. Pachika Buddha means silent Buddha. Okay, now we go to Ananda Pindika. So Ananda Pindika, as you all know, he is the richest man in Sarvati. The chief supporter of the Buddha was Ananda Pindika, the millionaire. Among his lay followers, he was regarded as the foremost almsgiver. The original name of Ananda Pindika, which means feeder of the helpless, was Sudatta. Owing to his unparalleled generosity, he was later known by his new name, Ananda Pindika. His birthplace is Sarvati. So the next paragraph we can skip because Jin Hao has read to you all. He visited the brother-in-law, then they were preparing like a grand reception. Then he came to know that it was supposed to be the Buddha. Eh? Then, because of that, he was full of joy when he heard the Buddha's name. Eh? Then he wants to go there. Then there was some coming obstruction, but he was able to overcome it. Yeah. And I think one of the Yaka, Sivaka, a Yaka himself, invisible, encouraged him by saying a stanza, and his fear vanished, and faith in the Buddha arose in his place. Then light appeared again, and he courageously sped forward. Nevertheless, all this happened a second time and yet a third time. Ultimately, he reached Sitavana, actually it should be Jetavana, where the Buddha was pacing up and down in the open air, anticipating his visit. The Buddha addressed him by his family named Suddhanta and called him to his presence. Ananda Pindika was pleased to hear the Buddha address him thus and respectfully inquired whether the Buddha rests happily. The Buddha replied, "Surely at all times happily does rest the Arahant in whom all fire extinct, who is clever not to sensuous desire, cool all his being, rid of all the germs that brings new life, all cumbrance cut off, subdues the pain and pinning of the heart, calm and serene, he rests happily, for in his mind he had attained to peace." So that was the famous verse. Then hearing the Dhamma, this Ananda Pindika became a Sotapan, stream enterer, or stream winner, and invited the Buddha to spend this rainy retreat at Savatthi. The Buddha accepted the invitation, suggesting that Buddha take pleasure in solitude. Ananda Pindika, returning to Savatthi, bought the park belonging to Prince Jetha at the price determined by carving. So the story goes, the whole site with gold coin, and erected the famous Jetavana monastery at a great cost. Here the Buddha spent 19 rain seasons. This monastery where the Buddha spent the major part of his life was the place where he delivered many of his sermons. Several discourses which were of particular interest to lay men was delivered to Ananda Pindika, although he refrained from asking any question from the Buddha, lest he should weary him. Once the Buddha discoursed on generosity, reminded Ananda Pindika that alms given to the order of the monk together with the Buddha is very meritorious. But more meritorious than such alms is the building of a monastery for the use of the order. More meritorious than such monastery is seeking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. See, where you take refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha is even more meritorious than building monastery for monks. Then building monastery for monks is even more meritorious than offering alms to the Sangha. So don't underestimate taking a refuge where you plant the seed of Bohi to go this way. Then more meritorious than seeking the refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha is the observance of the five precepts. See? Keeping your five precepts is so meritorious. Then more meritorious than such observance is meditation on loving kindness, even for a moment. And most meritorious of all is the development of insight as to the fleeting nature of things, based on insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self. They call it vipassana. We is the three universal characteristics of nature, impermanent, suffering state, and non-self. Then passana is the insight into it. It is evident from this discourse that the generosity is the first stage on the way of Buddhist life. More important than generosity is the observation of the five precepts, which tends to the discipline of words and deeds. Still more important and more beneficial is the cultivation of ennobling virtue like loving kindness, which lead to self-development. Most important and most beneficial of all self-discipline is the sincere effort to understand things as they truly are, means to develop the meditation. Commenting on the four kind of the four type of happiness that layperson can have, we have gone through. So we skip to page 169. Yeah? Oh, just now I didn't read the detail of blamelessness. Yeah? What is the bliss of blamelessness? Here in the Aryan disciple, means the enlightened disciple, is blessed with blameless action of body, speech and mind. At the thought, I am blessed with blameless action of body, speech and mind, bliss comes to him, satisfaction comes to him. This is called the bliss or happiness of blamelessness. Actually, here they didn't explain. One more part is, you live a blameless life, understand not? Where the wise will not blame you. That is the correct one. Yeah? Means living a life that the wise one will not blame you. Because praise and blame is a worldly condition. Even the Buddha also was blamed and praised. So if wise one don't blame you, then you are okay. Then winning the bliss or deathlessness, a man may then recall the bliss of really having. When he enjoys the bliss of wealth, he sees this is such by wisdom. When he sees, he knows. Thus is he wise, indeed in both respects. But this have not 1/16 of the bliss that come from a man of blamelessness. See, to live a life of blamelessness is very, very much more noble, yeah? Meritorious than the other type of bliss or happiness. Mm. Because blamelessness means you don't do foolish thing, yeah? The wrong thing. Yeah? Okay, I finish this part, then we end. I know the alarm clock sound already. On one occasion, when the Buddha visited the house of Ananda Pindika, he heard an unusual uproar inside the house and inquired what it was. Lord, it is Sujata, my daughter-in-law, who lives with us. She is rich and has been brought here from the wealthy family. He pays no heed to her mother-in-law, nor to her father-in-law, nor to her husband. Neither did she venerate, honor, reverence, nor respect the exalted one, replied Ananda Pindika. The Buddha called him to his presence and preached an illuminative discourse on seven kinds of wives that exist even in modern society as it was in the day of old. So this one will be reserved for next class. Eh? So next class, I will go through with you. So you want to know which category your wife belong to, then you wait for next Tuesday. Why they didn't talk about the seventh class of husband? Oh, PG going to say that. Okay. So, hopefully you have learned many things. So tonight, I think there is something that is very interesting that you can develop the understanding. Okay, Chin Hao, you can nominate the next one. Wow, he's so kind. He seek your permission first. Wow, Pao Lian. Smiling means consent. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Don't worry, next Tuesday you no need to do. I still continue. So you save 1 week, the following week. You will get ready, chapter 11. I give you more time. You see, everybody who came up, they did well. So this is good. You learn how to express yourself. You learn how to do research. Go to the internet or go to some of the Dhamma that I have shared with you. Whatever you want to know, you Google. There will be a lot of things there. Then you can evolve the understanding. Then you can read through the others. By now you will have the understanding. Then you know how to filter and which are the good ones, you know how to take it out. Then it will actually bring forth the condition for you to understand better, because you have to open up your horizon to read more of other type of sharing. Because the Buddha and his teaching, a lot of write-up are in the internet. And even I myself, I don't go for the details of Jataka story, because I was lucky during the early day when I started all this. There is this Reverend Suwano from Penang, the late Reverend Suwano. I like his talk because he speak Hokkien and his Hokkien Dhamma was very good. Because actually he is quite a good cultivator and he wanted to be a monk during the early days. But he don't have the condition because he still have a wife and the children dependent. Then he wait until he pensioned. I think almost 60 years old, then only he ordained. But as a lay person, he cultivated, he went to Burma. He got affinity with Burma. But he learned the correct teaching. Actually, not bad. His teaching was not bad. I like his Jataka story. I think when he was in Burma or as a lay person, Burma got a lot of this Tipitaka thing, and translated Thai or Dhamma. So if you read, the story are all there. And I save a lot of time because I just listen to what he said. Then I learned all the important Jataka story. But this seven wife one, I didn't hear from him. But he didn't talk about it. But he talked about the three evil roots. And a lot of all those Jataka story that I used to relate to you. Okay, now we will do the sharing of merits and transfer merits. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 hours or so. Then we shall share and transfer this merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika panyantang anamoditwa cirang rakantu lokasasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, let's pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.